Let's get started. Erev Tov, welcome back. It is such a pleasure to continue learning together. We are now in our sixth Orchos Tzedikim Shir. We're on the ninth and tenth chapters. We always look at two chapters. This time around, we're looking at Simcha and Daga. Simcha, maybe we'll translate it as joy or happiness. We'll probably stick with happiness for the most part. And Daga generally means worry. And so we see these two parallels of excitement and happiness and joy and that of worry. One thing that we'll point out, I don't always include our cover pictures and little cartoons. It's not just because I thought that joy and sadness were cute from Inside Out, but I actually specifically put that there as a reminder to me to point out that what we're talking about are sort of conventional opportunities for happiness and concern, but there are, what we've come to understand in the world, there are people who have a chemical imbalance. And they might be less prone to happiness or more prone toward worry. And what we're talking about here is not necessarily the be-all and end-all of how to achieve happiness or how to avoid any sort of daga or worry. Sometimes people need medical attention, whether that's talking to someone to sort it through or they generally just need psychiatric help. They need pills that can help them out. That's not what we're discussing today. If you know someone or yourself, things you could benefit from. It's a very worthwhile conversation. The Jewish community at this point in time is doing well at appreciating that it's not necessarily easy for everyone, and something like depression, albeit a dirty word, is something that does happen. For those interested, Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg actually just wrote about Shidduchim in Mishpacha magazine. I have the black and white version printed out because we don't get Mishpacha. But Rabbi Goldberg, whom, if you don't know, I highly recommend knowing. He's awesome. He's the rabbi of the Boca Raton Synagogue. He went on a whole tirade about how we approach shidduch dating, and one of the questions that comes up in the pre-interview is whether or not someone is medicated, and so you can check out Rabbi Goldberg there to talk about it, but I'm here to actively encourage everyone that if it could be helpful to you or to someone that you know, to seek out whether medication would be appropriate, and we're not talking about someone who might be clinically depressed in one way, shape, or form. I was talking to a friend who's a teacher of like 10th grade boys, and they like didn't like understand why in Inside Out sadness kept like touching the memories, because like they didn't get that like depression is not something that people like choose to do. It's something that like kind of happens on its own. So that's for 10th grade boys, but in Mitzvah Shem we should be able to understand better, and that people shouldn't have this issue. But we can't really start a conversation about Simcha or about Daga without that sort of framework. And now we can actually jump in. We can learn. You'll notice in our Sefer this is amongst the longest chapters. In Orchot Tzadikim, the chapter of Simcha, Baruch Hashem, it's robust. And Simcha basically takes a few forms. The way that our Machaber approaches it, we'll call him he, although we have addressed numerous times that it might not necessarily be a he. But our Machaber looks at Simcha and talks about happiness in the general sense, and that's basically how we'll approach it this evening. But there's another element of Simcha that might lead to or cause Simcha, and that's an element of Bitachon and Emunah. And Emunah and Bitachon are robust subjects that, quite honestly, in one night we can't talk about Simcha and worry and Daga and Bitachon. And so we're not going to talk about Bitachon tonight. If the Chevra want to continue discussing Bitachon, I'm basically just skipped like all those 40 paragraphs. And we can discuss it next week or at the end of all this, whenever. And so you guys let me know. But for the time being, we're just going to talk about Simcha. So when we're talking about Simcha, we're basically going to go through methodically, not the way that our Sefer did, just basically because we're not going to. There's not really a good reason for it. This is how I was thinking about it. But we're going to look at basically what does Simcha look like. Then we're going to appreciate when someone is with Simcha, what does that accomplish? Why would someone want to see something from a Simcha perspective? And then we're going to actually prove that a little bit. We're going to define really where Simcha comes from, which is actually where our author starts. And then we're going to look at sort of four keys to Simcha. Oftentimes, in Orchot Tzadikim, we'll have like a list. And so here, actually, there are three sets of lists. We're only going to look at one of them, just a list of sort of the four keys to Simcha. And then we're going to look at the flip side. Usually, we have sort of a mesh of the, not to say positive or negative media, because the whole vort in the Sefer is that there's no such thing as a positive or a negative. But the one that is more nitan toward positive versus negative, usually we'd have like a combination of Simcha and Daga built together. This time around, we're really focusing much more on Simcha and then on Daga afterward. Just the nature of the way this works, but it'll all fit together. I'll teach that. Okay, let's jump in our very first source. This is not the first source in our chapter. This is actually the 72nd paragraph in the Sepharia edition, just that's the easiest edition and most common and easiest to access for everyone. But this basically, in trying to appreciate what Simcha is, we talk about what might be the most famous Gemara about Simcha. And you might know the story, but effectively someone walks up to Eliyahu Navi and says, Eliyahu Navi, can you please tell me, who in this shuk, who on the street, who around here is destined for Olam Haba? What does Eliyahu Navi tell him? Do we know? Points to two guys and says, those guys. What's so special about those guys? They're clowns. They're leitzim. And what's so special about these clowns? Let's look at it inside. We see in source one, K'moshenei anashim she'amar aleihem she'hayu mibnei ha'olam haba. These two people who are from Olam Haba. Bishvil she'hayu anashim smechim. They're happy people. Uki she'hayu roim ish atzev. He sees someone who's sad. Hayim esamkan oso. They make the person happy. They're court jesters. So they do a little trick. Maybe they'll do something funny. Probably a lot of slapstick comedy. That's just what I picture when I think of court jesters. And someone who's got a frown, they turn it upside down. And these people are making this guy happy. And also what happens when people are fighting. Ukishahai roon shnaim miskotetim zedzeh. They see two people who are fighting back and forth. They're yelling at each other. You can imagine, maybe if you've ever been to the Shuk in Eretz Yisrael, in Machane Yehuda, people yelling it back and forth, maybe a little bit. And so what would these jesters do? Hayu omrim lahem mila debedusa. Debedihusa. It's not the easiest word to pronounce. Achahayu osim shalom b'nehem. They would tell jokes and they would bring people together. They'd make everyone happy. And so these two jesters, they're the ones who are going to Olam Haba. Why are they going to Olam Haba? Because they're making people happy. Happiness can be someone who brings joy to someone else, that in and of itself is a reason to bring someone all the way to Olam Haba. We didn't talk about mitzvahs. We didn't talk about Talmud Torah. We didn't talk about mitos in general. All we talked about was Simcha. So powerful is the opportunity of Simcha. And so too we see when it comes to Halakha. We don't quote it here, but it's Gemara talking about Rava. Rava, who was the Gadol Hador, whenever he would start a shiur, he'd always tell a joke. Now, why is Rava telling a joke? He wasn't a stand-up comedian, but he always felt it was important to open with a joke because... Why? We'll see inside. Because when people laugh, when it calms them down, they get less tense, and then they're able more open to learn Torah. And so when we're starting to learn Torah, particularly in the case that we're discussing here, they're trying to understand the halakha, you can't be so stressed, you can't be so tight. When people laugh, they're opening themselves up. Quite literally, he doesn't say it here, when people laugh, their mouths open up. You can picture, I'm sure everyone's had the experience where you're not supposed to be laughing, but like you can't help it. And it's something that's almost incontrollable. You're forced. Your body is pushing itself out. It's pushing the laughter out. It's making you open up to the world. And so when we're trying to learn halakha, when we're trying to learn Torah, what's going to bring people to Olam Haba, it's always going to be laughter. It's always going to be this element of happiness, of simcha, of joy. And just continuing in this paragraph, and the second to last line, ach lo samakta navel v'simchas hevel. But this isn't frivolous laughter. It's not laughter out of nothing. It's not bad laughter, I guess you could say. Ela divrei hamitzvos hamesamkenes halev. This is a mitzvah kind of activity. This is a holy laughter. Kedeksev pikudeshem yisarim esamkei lev v'zeh avichol zeh b'simchas mitzvah. That there's a laughter that's Torah-dic. That's a laughter that's built into Torah. There's a Purim Shpils that are designed to make people laugh. And laughter can be something that's going to lead us to Torah, or, God forbid, the opposite. And we don't really talk about it later, we'll discuss it now. It's just interesting. I don't know that I have a very good answer, but maybe I can suggest something. It's fascinating that laughter is something we see both in the good and in the bad, that you can imagine in media, you can in some way, shape, or form, you'll see people laughing in the positive. Laughter is an indication of people being happy and filled with joy. But also, like, bad guys tend to laugh a lot. You know, the stereotypical bad guy has, like, an evil laugh. And we see the same activity used for both the positive and the negative. And so we could say, like we said when it comes to love, that the greatest opportunity for good provides the greatest opportunity for bad. And so just like with love, there's opportunity for good and it can be corrupted. Laughter, there's opportunity for good and that can be corrupted. We also could suggest that laughter, like we said before, is sometimes involuntary. Real laughter is oftentimes comes out whether you want it to or not, whether you planned on laughing or not. And so laughter is almost an expression of who you are inside. It's an expression of your neshama in some ways. And so someone who's able to bring people to laugh is, that person is a ben olam haba. Those jesters are going to bring, are going to olam haba because they're able to bring a person's neshama out to a little bit, to express that for just a few minutes. Not just they're bringing shalom between people, but they're able to connect someone to who they are inside. And in the inverse, when someone who's wicked laughs, it's an expression of their wickedness. That's why always, you know, the end of an evil plan results in a wicked laughter. All right, but that might just be me seeing too many movies over the years. Now we get to something called 1840. Just show of hands. Has anyone heard of the website 1840? Okay. So, Rabbi David Beshefkin. Has anyone heard of Rabbi David Beshefkin? Has anyone seen his Twitter handle? That's really just for him. He's just be so happy if you do. He's the only person I know who, you know, a lot of times when authors, you know, publish their svarim, they'll, like, you know, publish a sefer, and like on the inside there'll be contact information, maybe a phone number or like a street address. Once in a while you'll see like an email. Rabbi David Beshefkin put his Twitter handle @dbashideas. He's the only person I know who published like a sefer, like a real sefer with like marmakomos and like real intelligent Torah thoughts, and a Twitter handle. Anyway, Rabbi David Beshefkin is the director of education for NCSY, amongst now many, many other things. And one project he's working on now is this website called 1840. To getting into what 1840 is all about and why it's called that, he's got lots of Torahs on that. But basically, the website is addressing modern-day Jewish questions and issues, and the primary way that he does that is once in a while with videos, primarily with articles and with podcasts where he interviews interesting person X, Y, or Z. And so one of the first things he did was about comedy. L'da'ati, that is not one of the most pressing issues that we need to talk about in the modern day, but it is one of those pressing issues that David Beshefkin has to talk about. He's like a shtickl stand-up comedian. He's hilarious. And so he wanted to talk about it. And so that's what we see in our second source, a discussion about Torah and comedy. And that really could help us frame what does Simcha accomplish? What are we doing? Why do we care about Simcha? Yeah, we're connecting to our souls in one sense. That's sort of one suggestion. Maybe there's a little bit more to this Simcha that we can see. And Rabbi Beshefkin is working off the same Gemara we just quoted about the two jesters who made people laugh. And they said that they're B'nai Olam Haba. This is not a simple, this is not a light praise. This is amongst the highest praises we can give someone to be a Ben Olam Haba. And so he suggests that maybe when we think about comedy, comedy is tragedy plus time. And then he quotes someone named Steve Allen, who was the original Tonight Show host before all the people who are doing it now. I'm not even sure who hosts it now. What doesn't matter. So he says, and this is our quote in the bottom of page one, "Man jokes about the things that depress him, but will usually wait till a certain amount of time has passed. It must have been a tragedy when Judge Crater, don't know who that is, disappeared. But everyone jokes about it now. I guess you can make a mathematical formula out of it. Tragedy plus time equals comedy." All right, we got that tragedy plus time. Bad things that are going on. After a period of time, that's going to create a funny joke. And Rabbi Beshefkin continues, "Perhaps that's why comedians are described by the Talmud as coming from the world to come. B'nai Olam Haba, not that they're going toward Olam Haba, but they're actually from Olam Haba." It's an interesting appreciation. You see that he's not just a clown, he also knows how to learn. "So with enough time, distance, and perspective, the humor of the world can finally emerge." What we see here is that a joke, what a comedian can do, what laughter, and what simcha in some ways can do, is can put things into perspective. And when I'm too narrowly focused, when I'm living in the moment right now, nothing's funny. When things are difficult, it's not funny. But after a while, you can imagine in your situations, you know, you and your friend, that you get stuck and your car gets messed up and like, you know, a whole litany of things go wrong. And it's like the worst day of your life. And in the moment, it's the worst day of your life. But a year later, when you're remembering it, it's kind of funny. You're able to laugh about it. You weren't able to laugh about it in the moment because it's difficult. Tragedy in the moment is difficult. But when you add time, when you give it a little bit of a perspective, it can be funny. And when we talk about Simcha, Simcha really is often a result of a perspective, of seeing things a little differently. And what's one of the strongest indications, or the strongest examples of someone being besimcha because they have perspective? Gamzul Tova, Rabbi Akiva. We're not going to actually see the story with Rabbi Akiva, and it's interesting we don't quote the Rabbi Akiva story. We're going to quote a slightly different one. Now we're in source three. And the We say, V'chein, k'shiyesh l'adam shum yisurin yismach gamkein, that if you have the right perspective, you can rejoice even when you're going through troubles. V'chein amar chachamim ba'al metzia, chavivin yisurin, that we actually love, we appreciate struggles. V'od amar chachamim in tainis, kol ha-samach b'yisurin shibarin alav, mevi yeshua li'olam. If you can be besimcha when difficult things are happening to you, that will bring redemption to the world. That's not easy, though. But maybe what can we do? What might be something we can start train ourselves to try and be besimcha, to see struggles in a more positive light? We can start saying Gam Zulatova. V'yargil piv lomar Gam Zulatova. This, too, is for the good. Oh, kol ma da'avid rachmana latava avid. Or maybe not, this, too, is for the good. But everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing for the positive. Everything God's doing is for the good. I'm assuming that no one here is doing Daf Yomi. If you are, more power to you. The Daf today is Tzachim Daf Nun, and it's the end of the fourth parak, beginning of the fifth parak, maybe third, fourth. It's the end of the parak, and Tzachim Daf Nun has a Gemara you may have heard before that we say Kishim Shem Mevarkan Al Tov, Kach Mevarkan Al Hara. That went just like we make brachos when good things happen. We say Shachayano, we say Baruch Atov Meitiv. So too, when bad things happen, we make brachos. And in this world, the way that manifests is when good things happen, Hatovah Meitiv. When bad things happen, Rachmanu Litzlan, we say Baruch Dayan HaEmes. But the foundation there is that everything that Kadosh Baruch Hu is doing is for the good. Maybe I can't see it in the moment right now. I can't see it clearly. And so in this world, I say Dayan HaEmes. But La'asid Lavo, in the future, in the world to come, like these jesters who can laugh, everyone will always say Baruch Hatovah Meitiv. Everything that was negative, that seemed negative now, will eventually realized to be positive. That's that message of Kol Ma D'Avid Rachmana L'Tava Avid, that everything that Kadosh Baruch Hu does is real ultimately for the good. Ki yesh kama ra'os hasher sofan tovos. Lots of bad things ultimately end up being positive. V'chein darshu Rabbeinu saying al mikra is just like we see based on the pasuk in Yeshayahu. Od kai Hashem ki anafta bi yeshuva peka the tenakameni. And I'm going to thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because even though it seemed like you were angry with me, your anger actually turned away and you ended up comforting me. It seemed like God was punishing me, but actually that punishment ended up being good. How many times do we hear stories about so-and-so didn't get the job they were always hoping for, and eventually it turned into a better job? They didn't end up with the spouse they were hoping for, and they ended up with a better spouse. Oh, we got to tell a great story. Garth Brooks, I couldn't tell you how long ago, it was a long time ago though, because I wrote this song called Unanswered Prayers. And it's a country song. It's like a very country-sounding song. I should have sent it out. Maybe I'll send it out after. And this song, he basically talks about how, you know, one day he goes home for a reunion, and he meets this girl, and he starts remembering what it was like with this girl. This was his high school sweetheart. And he used to pray every day that they'd be together. And they were so in love. And sure enough, it doesn't work out. And he goes back to this reunion, and now that he's got a wife, and he's got a family, and he meets this woman, and her life is a wreck. And his life is so wonderful, and he comes to see that all the things that he saw in her when she was 16 turn out to be flaws that hurt her the rest of her life. And he said, and sometimes God's greatest gift are unanswered prayers. So that's a beautiful song. It's worth listening to. But the great part about it is that when someone told Rav Schechter about the song, told him the story, I think they might have even showed him the lyrics, Rav Schechter started crying. Baruch Hashem, country music makes Rav Schechter cry. So when we appreciate that everything Kadosh Baruch Hu does for the good, sometimes unanswered prayers are actually the greatest gift he can give us, then we have a little bit better of a perspective, then we can see better. That's what that Pasuk in Yeshayahu means. And now we're going to read a mashal. And this is not exactly the same story that we hear with Rabbi Akiva, but maybe we know the story with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva with his donkey and his chicken and his torch, they all end up going away and end up saving his life. We see a similar story here. The story goes as follows. Masha, we're right in the middle of this paragraph, number 3. Masha b'shnei b'nei adam shahako la'avur b'svina. Two people are planning on taking a boat trip. Echad yashav locates baraglo. And one guy gets a thorn in his leg. One guy breaks his leg. Shalohaya yako leilich b'svina. And he can't even climb the ramp to get onto the boat. So he's going to miss the cruise. V'chaveiro, niktos b'svina la'avur. And the friend, I guess, like, they're not so close, he's not going to be like, oh, well, if you're not going, I can't go. He's like, okay, you can't go, so I'll take your room. And you know, have a nice week. I'll see you when I get back. You can stay here and do nothing with your broken leg. So Hisco, Zella, Calculus, Yomo. And so the broken leg guy's like, oh, now look, this is like such a terrible day. So unfortunate that I'm not able to go on this cruise. And you don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be a Hollywood writer to know what's about to happen next. What do you know? The boat sinks and everyone aboard the ship died. Nebuch. And then what happens? Our leg broken friend says, Oz his skills leshevach labori yisparach. And now he starts praising Kadosh Baruch Hu. Ki ra shahaya zos kidei lach yosa. And this, he came to realize, was actually in order to save him. His broken leg saved him. Now, good story, not good story. We get it. Good. All right. No one cares. It is a classic Hashgacha Pratis story. It's an unfortunate Hashgacha Pratis story. Rabbi Yossi Katz, another one of the YU Torah Mitzion Kol rabbis, points out that you shouldn't need a whole ship of people to die so you can appreciate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking out for you. Gamzu L'tova, Komanda Avid, Rachmana L'tav Avid, should apply whether or not that ship went down. You shouldn't need a plane to crash, Rachmana L'tzan. You shouldn't need a ship to go down, Chas V'Shalom, in order for you to be like, oh, now I appreciate that God has my best intentions in mind. Now I get it. Until now, I was convinced that God must have messed up. But no, now it makes sense. So this Gemara needed. It's interesting that he quotes this one, doesn't quote the story with Rabbi Akiva, where Rabbi Akiva like is not able to get lodging in the inn, and he loses all the, his things, and comes to real, and then the next morning wakes up, and sure enough, bandits went through the town, and Rabbi Akiva would have been killed had the bandits shown up. I don't have the marmakum for that. I apologize. I should. Let me know if you're curious. Why do we not teach that one? This is not necessarily productive. It is, but it's not necessary. We're going to share it anyway. Rabbi Akiva story is about Rabbi Akiva and others, whereas this story is about someone who knows somebody else. It's one thing for other people to suffer and for you to realize that you're actually receiving blessing. That is not ideal. But when someone you know suffers, that should never result in joy for you. Yes, maybe you didn't have to suffer in that capacity, and you can appreciate it because someone you know did suffer. That should never, ever be a source of joy for you. Koman to Avid Rachmana L'tav Avid should be enough. That assume that everyone thing a Kadosh Baruch Hu does is for the good, not just when something bad happens. And this all comes from the Gemara in Tainis on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph tells us from Nachum Ish Gamzu. Nachum Ish Gamzu, his last name was not Gamzu. His mother and father were not named Mr. and Mrs. Gamzu. Nachum Ish Gamzu was a nickname that he got because his name was Nachum, and he always said Gamzu L'tova. This too is for the good. He was a Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva. Now it's interesting. He's not called Rebbe Nachum Ish Gamzu. It's entirely possible that Nachum Ish Gamzu was not like a Chashuv Tana. We don't see a lot of lessons coming from Nachum Ish Gamzu. We could suggest that this was just one midah that he excelled at. And maybe we're not going to be the best at Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. Maybe we're not going to be incredible in our midos of Rachmim and Akzarius or Busha and Azus. But maybe I can be great at this. Maybe I can be good at just one thing. Nachum Ish Gamzu becomes a Rebbe for Rebbe Akiva just because he's good at this one little thing. Okay. Now we're going to move on. This is actually earlier in the chapter, but it's later on for us. This is still in source 3, but the second paragraph. When we talk about, what is Simcha all about? Effectively, Simcha is Ki Hamamin Belev Shalem in the bold, Vaboteach Be'ezer Atzur. If we want to understand what is Simcha, Simcha, plain and simply, is saying everything that's going on is from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Everything Kadosh Baruch Hu does is for the good. I can always be Simcha if I can appreciate that everything that's happening to me, whether it feels good or doesn't feel good, whether I make a Tov or Metiv or I make a Dayan HaMes, if I know that all of it's coming from a God and ultimately it will end up for the positive, then I can be Simcha. Now, is that easy? Definitely not. But it is possible. It is doable. You don't have to be a Tana, and you can still become Nachum Ish Gamzu. And so, when we can appreciate that someone has our best interest in mind, then everything that happens is for the good. And so you can appreciate the crazy mashal of I don't know if anyone's ever had a sports injury, but like particularly if someone messes up a shoulder, sometimes all you have to do is like snap a shoulder back in. It's super, super painful. Baruch Hashem, I haven't had to do it, but I have been around. When it's happened, my mother's a physical therapist, and there, more than once, she's got an office in our house, And there are times when we'd be in there and we would hear grown men screaming because good physical therapy sometimes requires a lot of physical pain. But if you trust your physical therapist, and she's a very smart lady like my Ima, then you know that this is for the good. And sometimes if I know that Curtis Baruch was a good physical therapist, I know Curtis Baruch was a good doctor, then the pain and suffering that I'm going through is only going to help me be better later on. The only way for your arm to start working again, if it's been knocked out of its socket, is for you to shove it back in, which is super painful, but sometimes we need that. And so if we can appreciate that everything Kodesh Baruch is doing is for the good, then the challenges and the suffering I experience can be a bracha, can be something good. But that doesn't mean that it's easy. It is something to strive for. It's something that we want to work on and gain. Now we go to the very beginning of our parak. Now that we have an appreciation of how did they basically come to have simcha, let's talk about what is simcha. And it's an interesting definition. It's not the definition that I think I would have guessed. Maybe that's why we didn't start with it. But in source 4, in the bottom of page 2, which is the very first paragraph from our chapter, we say, Hamida hazos ba'al adam machmas rov shalva bliba bli pegara. Where does joy, where does happiness come from? From an overwhelming sense of peace and tranquility and security, I guess you could say, in their heart without any sort of bad going on. Velo yarlo davar hamatzbiota. And nothing bad is coming that might make someone sad. It sounds like happiness, in this definition, is like being on vacation. But like the vacation where like only the family members that you like come, none of like the annoying cousins. It's like the most geschmack vacation you could ever imagine. And that's the definition that we get. That's what happiness is. I don't get it. This isn't the start because I don't see how that is the definition of happiness. Especially when we look going on. So I'll admit, I'm leaving this as a tzarach iyun. It requires further understanding. Because the way that our author starts out Simcha is saying that everything is good, there are no problems whatsoever. I don't know if that's real Simcha. There's a great quote that I should have looked up beforehand, that I thought about and then forgot about and then thought about again. And so maybe we'll look it up. But it's a quote from admittedly not a Torah source, that, you know, what is peace? I mean, maybe peace and happiness are a little different. But peace is not being in a place of shalva, like described here. But peace is to have lots of things going on. To be in a storm, to have a storm hurling around you, but to have peace in your heart. That even if there are things going on, you can still be happy. There's a very big difference between joy, which we call gila, and simcha. Simcha is not joy. Simcha is happiness. Happiness is being content with who you are, where you are, with what's going on in your life. It's not just, oh, there are no troubles, there's no difficulty. There might be difficulty in my life. Doesn't mean I'm not besimcha. Someone who's sometimes, you know, you could have financial struggles, you could have relationship struggles, and that leads to a lack of simcha. But you could also be besimcha even with all your financial struggles. There's a guy in West Orange, New Jersey. I grew up in Livingston, it's next to West Orange. There's a guy named Moshe Fuhrer. Moshe Fuhrer, he kind of looks like the Monopoly man. Moshe Fuhrer, he's a small, very strong little guy. He's got a minion in his basement where everyone who lives on Crestwood and the surrounding streets, maybe Yevon, they all dive in there. It's far away from here. But Moshe Fuhrer, he's always besimcha. And so you would imagine that everything in his life is always perfect. No! Moshe Fuhrer lost his fortune, not a fortune, he lost all his money twice. Two times his business fell apart. And Afal Pi Kein, he was still besimcha. This definition doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand what the Orchos Tzadikim is trying to tell us. Because saying that simcha is just when nothing bad's going on, it's never going to happen. You don't just have to say, oh, in the current world circumstances, and maybe like, you know, I've got very, very poorly colored glasses because we're coming off of what might have been one of the worst years in world history. But life's not perfect. Life doesn't always work out. You can still be besimcha, though. If you can be besimcha when you appreciate what a Kodesh Baruch Hu is doing, that you're a player in a Kodesh Baruch Hu's game, you don't need to always have everything go your way. So I don't get it. I apologize if I'm undermining the Sefer, but that's how I feel. That's not how I feel. That's what I've come to appreciate, the way the Torah approaches this topic. But okay, well, let's look at the keys to simcha. And the keys to simcha are listed. This is one of our lists. And there are four things that can lead a person to simcha. And now, I'll just give a raya, a proof, to why this initial definition didn't occur to me. it doesn't resonate with me. Because the four things we're about to list, none of them have to do with being tranquil. If the goal of happiness was that everything should be okay, then the steps toward that should be figure out everything in your life, get everything in order, make sure no one ever bothers you, and then you'll be besimcha. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about something different. And so, bechavod, I don't know how our chapter started out that way, but I'm not convinced. Sorry. All right, I'll stop my tirade. We'll move on to the next piece. Shira. Interesting. She's saying I'm just not good at reading. I hear. That's a good point. I tend to assume that. Right.
I don't know.
No. That's fair. This is why it's not just me talking. I could just record this and send it out and you can listen, but this is why we have to learn together. So let's see. Amida hazos ba'ala adam machmas rov shalva belibo bli pegara. That this mida of simcha comes from a person because of a lot of shalva, which means tranquility, in a person's heart, without any sort of evil infringing upon it. Interesting. Okay. Stand corrected. Maybe what we're talking about is a person who's able to achieve this shalva, who's able to achieve this peace in their heart without anything bothering it. Not say that nothing bad ever happens to you, but never feeling that something bad ever happens to you. Okay, sure. I think you're right, and I appreciate that.
Oh, I don't know.
Your question is still a great question. No, but it's not a good question because I don't think that's what he's saying. I think you're totally right. Yeah. All right. We gotta strike that from the record. The past 5 minutes have not been a waste of time, Khalila. But I think I'm wrong. I think you're right that it's dafka balibo. It's specifically in a person's heart, and all the things that we described. You're not gonna be bashalva. You're not gonna be at peace. But in your heart, you might be able to. You can still achieve that. That vacation experience, if you can appreciate that everything that's happening is for the positive. Okay. All right. We'll run with that. Okay. Let's list off a few things. There are four things that we're going to list as being the keys to achieving simcha, and specifically to be sameach b'chalka. You know, what's the I think it's fair to say the famous Mishnah, Ezehu hashir hasameach b'chalka, who is rich, someone who's happy with their lot. How do I make sure that I am sameach b'chalki? Happy with my lot. Echad, tzarech bitachon gadol be'elokim. You got to have a lot of faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what does it mean to have faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? We'll see one story, just one little piece, and then we're going to have to leave it for another time. Hasheni ha'emunah, which means belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, what's the difference between emunah and bitachon? There's lots of writing on that, and we can explore another week, but not this evening. But we'll just say that bitachon is more of an actively right now. I am having bitachon in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I'm trusting that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is doing for the positive. Whereas emunah is not necessarily something that's going to lead to action. Emunah is a mindset. Whereas bitachon is sometimes I need to hold back or I need to actively do in a form of bitachon. This activity needs to be in trust of that a Kodesh Baruch Hu will do for the good. I'm going to the mashal. You know, could be I'm going to spend this money on my child's education. I'm going to spend this money on Shabbos food, and I trust, I'd be talking that Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to make sure that I have enough money to pay for whatever comes next. So Echad Bitachon, which is more of an active trust. Beis is Emuna, which is more of a klaliistic of trust and belief in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Gimel Hashlishi is Hasechel. There needs to be some sort of intellectual appreciation of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that what he's doing is for the positive, and that what's happening in front of me right now, which feels painful, is actually not necessarily going to be bad. V'haravi, ha'istapkus. I have enough. My speak, I don't need any more. And then I can be besimcha. I'm not running after things. I must speak, I'm okay. Now, one of the things that we've discussed on numerous occasions, the way we started out our learning together, was that we want to shine, that we want to be someone who people look at and say, oh my gosh, she is so amazing. And because she's a representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu must be amazing. Asher Bracha Aspar, through you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shines. And one of the personalities that stands out most in my mind of someone who who brings people close to Torah, not necessarily through anything, but just radiates it, is Rabbi Dar Orlovsky. There was a period of my life where I was obsessed with him. I've come to become obsessed with other people. But Rabbi Orlovsky exudes happiness, exudes joy, and he tells stories about how people have approached him and said, you know, I wasn't so sure that I wanted to be from, and I've tried not being from, but it seems like, you know, with all of my averus, all the things that I'm doing, you still seem to be happier than I am. And Rabbi Orlovsky's like, yeah, probably. And one of the most formative moments in my religious experience, everyone asks, at least when you're melodramatic and you refer in CSY, you know, what was like your aha moment? I don't know that I had an aha moment, but one of the things that I look back on that I think about still to this day is Rabbi Orlovsky basically said that if he could find a system that would, in the world, that would bring him more joy than Torah mitzvos, he would do it. That on a base level, he's not engaged in Torah mitzvos because it's MS. He doesn't need to be engaged in Torah mitzvos because it's a Masorah. He's engaged in Torah mitzvos because it brings him simcha, it brings him joy. And if we can exude that simcha just from being engaged in Torah mitzvos, people will follow. People become frum because they meet Rabbi Orlovsky and they're like, he is so happy. I want whatever he's having. I want to be happy as well. And so I heard this story from him about Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak was one of the early Hasidic Rebbeim. He's the author of the Kedushas Levi. And one day he's walking with his Hasidim. And you know, Hasidim, they're always very interested in what the Rebbe's doing. And so they're walking, and he stops. And because he stopped, the Hasidim stop. And he says, Hasidim. And he says, yes, Rebbe. And he says, if I was a Kodesh Baruch Hu, do you know what I would do right now? And they say, what? He says, exactly what a Kodesh Baruch Hu is doing. You think I'm smarter than a Kodesh Baruch Hu? And unfortunately, sometimes we think that we're smarter than a Kodesh Baruch Hu. We're second-guessing, saying, "What? You know, why would God do this to me?" It basically says, my life should be look like X, Y, and Z. God instead have it look like L, M, Q, R, Q, R, B, D, 41, 92, ampersand. And okay, it didn't go the way I thought it would. But it's not because... But if I were to ever suggest that it should have gone A, B, C, or X, Y, Z, that's just because I think I'm smarter than Kodesh Baruch Hu. And Chalila to think that I'm smarter than a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And what Simcha really stems from is the ability to say, yeah, what a Kodesh Baruch Hu is doing probably makes more sense than whatever I think I should be doing. And that's what paragraph 18 is about. We're not going to look at it right now. And then you can't talk about Simcha unless you talk about learning Torah. And there's a Simcha in learning Torah. And we're not going to look at it inside because I spent too long ranting about my misreading of the beginning. Thank you, Shira. But when you're feeling Simcha about Talmud Torah, and Talmud Torah is just an example of any mitzvah that we're performing, there are a few reasons why I might feel the Simcha. We've talked about that maybe you feel a Simcha because you feel a sense of accomplishment. I learned this. I understood it. It was not simple. It was not easy. Or it wasn't simple or easy for me to spend an hour learning, and I spent that time, and I feel accomplished. I feel good. That's one reason why I might be with Simcha when I'm learning, when I'm doing mitzvos. Maybe the reason is because I'm saying, oh my gosh, I get to learn about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I get to do a Kodesh Baruch Hu mitzvos. A Kodesh Baruch Hu, Melech Malchayim Lachem, the Ribono Shel Olam, cares how I spend my time, and that's a source of Simcha for me. And so, whenever we're engaging in something, if I think, I'm saying Shema now because I need to say Shema now, then okay. But I'm lighting candles now because I'm supposed to light candles. But if I spend a moment thinking about the fact that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is waiting for me, there's a beautiful story about a young student is traveling to Radin to visit the Chofetz Chaim, to enter the yeshiva, and he gets to the Chofetz Chaim's house very, very late. He's staying in the Chofetz Chaim's house before he was going to join the yeshiva at large, and so he gets there very, very late. And the Chofetz Chaim, you know, he's there, he's waiting for him, and the student arrives, and, you know, he gets organized, he's shown to his room, and the student's like, I have to daven Maariv. He's like, it's so late, I'm so tired, you know, I'm going to take a little nap, and then you'll wake up in a couple hours, and I'll daven Maariv then. Then I'll be awake, I'll be rejuvenated, I'll be able to daven really, really well, really nicely. Sure enough, what happens, we can probably guess. He oversleeps, ends up waking up in the morning, doesn't daven Maariv. So he feels a little bit badly, doesn't feel so bad. And the next morning, the Chofetz Chaim sees him, and he says, "Nu, did you daven Maariv?" The guy's like, "No, I didn't." Like, "Yeah, all right, it was a mistake. You know, halakhically, I'm allowed to daven Tashlum, and I'll daven two chakras instead. It'll be okay." The Chofetz Chaim says, "You're right, except, do you know how much a Kodesh Baruch Hu is waiting for your Maariv? Do we think about the fact that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is waiting for me to do a mitzvah? maybe if I thought about my mitzvahs, thought about my Talmud Torah as a Kodesh Baruch Hu waiting for me to do it, I'd be very much besimcha, because this is such an awesome opportunity. God's waiting for this. Okay. We're not going to get into all the details, but simcha is something that we said can be used for the positive. It is positive. It can lead you to Olam Haba. It also could lead you down the wrong path. It could lead you to the negative. And you know, simcha that's really late sunnis, that's turning into, that's making a mockery of things, can undermine tremendous growth. You could be in a shir, you could be in an experience where you're so inspired, you're so engaged, and you want it to grow, and you're ready to grow, and you're feeling it. Someone makes a negative joke, it could undermine everyone's growth, because all of a sudden everyone becomes uncomfortable. Sometimes when you have late sunnis, you have people clowning around. People get uncomfortable, and they're not willing to take that step. One of the things I did when I was working for Yachad is I would stand in the middle of a circle, and I would make myself look silly. And that was on purpose, because one, it was fun, and it was probably good for me, but because when we're on a Yachad Shabbaton, I wanted people to grow. I wanted people to branch out. You know, Yachad is basically trying to get public school, typically developing students, to appreciate that they can be friends with someone with special needs, even though there's a diagnosis, that they can still both like baseball. They can still, you know, both appreciate fashion. They can still both really like to sing. And so on the Yachad Shabbaton, you want people to be comfortable. And so in order to do that, you have to make people okay feeling silly. And sometimes being friends with the Yachad member means okay being okay looking silly or feeling silly, doing something silly. And so when the person in the middle of the circle, the person running the Shabbaton, is doing silly things, it sort of gives everyone else that opening to do the same. What we see is that, you know, these four foundations, these four keys to simcha, of bitachon and emuna and seichel and histapkus, we see with the Levi Yitzchak that emuna bitachon, I trust HaKadosh Baruch is doing whatever he's supposed to do. I'm not going to second guess him. And there we're seeing the first two of those essentials. The seichel, that you need to appreciate that everything HaKadosh Baruch is doing is for the good. Learning Torah is basically seeing how HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates in the world and operates for the good. And histapkus is that what I have is enough. But it's not just that what I have is enough, it's that what I'm doing is okay, that what I'm doing is appropriate, and it's avoiding this negative laughter, this leitzanus. Because leitzanus is saying that there's something wrong here, this isn't good. Comedy can be for the positive, but unfortunately, it could also be for the negative. The next thing we have on our list is about drinking. There's a number of paragraphs about drinking. We're not going to talk about it. One, I'm not concerned about this group. It would really be more of a rant for anyone listening who might be of the male persuasion, or for your future spouses or siblings, but we're not going to talk about it now. I'm happy to, we'll find some time for me to rant about drinking, particularly at weddings, which is awful. We'll spend a few minutes talking about daga, talk about worry, because effectively, daga is not the inverse of simcha. Daga is the preventative of simcha. Someone could be besimcha and have things to worry about, but as soon as someone starts worrying, they're no longer besimcha. And ultimately, why does someone ever worry? Because of that lack of emunah, that lack of bitachon. And it's very normal. None of us are perfect that we have a full emunah, a full faith that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing everything good, and we're not able to, and that we're able to see in that sort of big perspective. But worry is what's going to prevent me from really connecting. It's going to prevent me from seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But a few things to think about. Even if I'm worried, because I'm probably not going to be so perfect in the next, right now, at this stage of my life, that I'm not going to worry. But Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, we've probably heard this before, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says that your face is a Rishus HaRabim. And whatever is expressed on your face, other people are seeing. It's going to impact the way that they think, the way that they feel. And so even if I'm worried about something, even if I'm concerned, I want to try and not show it on my face. I want to hold that in a little bit. Doesn't mean you hold it in forever. That's not psychologically healthy. You find a friend you can talk to. You know, you call up each other and say, we learned about daga, and I don't want to feel daga, but I do feel daga, but I got to express it to you because I don't want everyone else to see it. I don't want the world to be slighted by my daga. But there are things that are worth worrying about, and we just got a list. I'm sorry we can't read them inside. But Orchid Sadikim tells us, what should I worry about? This is all in source number 10. What should I worry about? I should worry about sinning. I should be very concerned that I don't want to mess up. And we talked in the context of Ahava and Yira, Ahava and Sina, that what does loving HaKadosh Baruch Hu mean? What does Yira Hashem mean? What does fearing HaKadosh Baruch Hu mean? It means that I'm so afraid of messing up that a Curtis Barker won't want to have a relationship with me anymore. Similarly, with Dalga, I should be afraid. I should be worried that I'm going to mess up. I should never allow myself to be put in a precarious situation where I might end up, Khalila, violating some sort of sin. I shouldn't be in the situation where I go to sleep without an alarm, assuming that I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night so I can daven Maariv. I should be so worried that I don't let that happen. I daven Maariv right now. What else do we want to worry about? We want to worry that maybe I could be doing more. I can be better. That we want to be doing a cheshbon nefesh, that maybe I'm not the best version of myself and I can be more. That's something that's worth worrying about. What do I want to worry about? I want to worry about the Torah that I learned and the mitzvahs that I performed. I don't want those to go away. And so particularly when it comes to Torah, there are two awesome isim. We'll throw it, they'll break quick. That, we want to be worried about forgetting our Torah. We don't want to risk all of that effort going for naught. The Chasam Sofer was asked how he remembers so much. The Chasam Sofer was one of the Gedolei Hador. And how do you remember so much? And he said, I worked so hard trying to understand it the first time, it'd be a shame for me to forget it now. So he didn't forget things because he cared so much about it. He didn't want to. He was worried about forgetting it. And much more recently, Rav Avadia Yosef, Zichrono Livracha, who knew everything. His chuvos literally list hundreds of books about just this one topic. And tells you exactly where they are. He knew everything. And yet, the family tells a story that at night, when he would learn with his son, he would open up a phone book and sift through it, find his son's phone number, and call his son. And at one point, they're like, Abba, what's going on? You know everything. You can't remember your son's phone number? And he says, I love Torah. That's why I remember it. I don't love your phone number. I don't care about that phone number. So why should I remember it? And if we can develop such a love for Torah, we can develop such a love for the mitzvot that we're performing that we worry about losing them. You only worry about things you care about. You don't worry about things that don't matter. There was a playoff game tonight, a football playoff game. There were a lot of people who were not worried about who won because they don't care about football. And part of what we want to accomplish is we want to worry so much that, am I going to be able to do this mitzvah that I've been performing? Am I going to be able to do it again today? Am I going to be able to learn? Am I going to remember my learning? Those are the things that we want to spend our time worrying about, because those are the things we want to care about. And this one's beautiful. This is paragraph 13, Yud Gimel, the bottom of page 5. I'm going to read this one inside because it's so great. Gamma da'aga mo'elas le'inyan shelo yariv im ha'adam b'chinam. What should I be worried about? That I should not fight with someone unnecessarily. It's a chumrah in Kavod HaBrios. I don't want to get into a fight. I'm worried that this conversation might lead to a fight, and so I'm going to take it a different direction. I don't want to allow my Shabbos table to turn into World War III. I want things to be wonderful. I want things to be sweet. I want them to be thoughtful. I'm going to be machmir and Kavod HaBrios. I'm not going to allow it to turn into a fight. All right, I need an honest answer. We can go until 9 o'clock, or we can do it a little shorter. I always think we'll go short, and it never happens. But this is a beautiful lesson from a more modern book. But we can skip the option B thing on our last page and just end off. You tell me. Give me a thumbs up if we're okay going till 9 o'clock. Okay, wonderful. All right, this is a book called Option B. Option B, it doesn't matter, is written by Sheryl Sandberg and Adam Grant. Here, I'll hold it up for those who want to write down. And Adam Grant is an ingenious, super crazy awesome. I think this is mirrored, so very impressive if you can do it. He's an industrial organizational psychologist at Wharton. He's like one of like the coolest, smartest people operating right now, who's figuring out how people operate, and he's a super smart psychologist. Sheryl Sandberg is the number two at Facebook. And basically this book was written after Sheryl Sandberg's husband died. He had an aneurysm on the treadmill one day on vacation and just dropped dead. And this is the 125 pages, 150 pages of her coping with that. And basically, the psychological yesodos are from Adam Grant, and a lot of the other things are her story of how she got over it. It's very, very interesting, and I think worthwhile to read. And one thing she quotes from Martin Seligman, she quotes this thing called the three P's whenever someone's going through something difficult. And what are those three P's? Those three P's are pervasive, personal, and permanent. That when someone's going through something challenging, oftentimes they suffer that this is pervasive. That this is that, right now I'm suffering. In the case of Sheryl Sandberg, she lost her husband, and that the grief of losing her husband is going to be pervasive. She's going to lose everything in her life, Chas v'Shalom. And that it's personal, that it's in some way, shape, or form her fault, and then it's permanent, and then it's never going to go away. I'm always going to be sad. I'm always going to miss my husband. And those are things that she had to deal with. And when it comes to Daga, oftentimes those three things enter into what we're dealing with as well. Because number one lesson to avoid Daga is what we see in Tesvav, the example of a person shouldn't avoid doing something positive because they're worried something bad is going to happen. The example, Lo yimna me leilech sham lilmod mishum pakar hadrakim, kederach amar ha'atzia. Don't not go because you're worried you're going to get hurt. Why? Ela yakshov, sherov ha'olam holkim ve'enam mizkakin. Most people do this and they're fine. It's not normal, it's not healthy, and it's not really derech ha'Torah to worry about getting on an airplane when so many millions of people fly in airplanes all the time. It is statistically safe, and you don't need to be worried. Is it possible that something bad will happen, chas v'shalom? Yes, but you don't need to worry about it. It is not, and it's not pervasive. There's no danger that exists here. And that's Aleph. Beis, about personal. And this is sort of the reverse. When do we want to be worried? When something bad happens in the world, the Derech HaTorah is to be personally concerned. That is this bad thing happening to me? Maybe yes, maybe no. The obvious example is what we're still experiencing for the past 10 months of a COVID-19, a coronavirus. And is it a personal issue for me? For all of us under the age of 30 who are in Baruch Hashem good health, we probably would be fine if we, God forbid, got COVID. Maybe some of us even did get COVID. And so the personal there is not the worldwide pandemic that's impacting me. The personal is there something I can be worried about? When I worry, it's that there's something bad in the world, and can I do something about it? As a Torah Jew, can I daven? Can I learn more? Can I take on a mitzvah? The overarching message that the Jewish world has been putting out for the past 10 months is how can I be better? How can I personally take on responsibility? How can I personally worry about this, even though I can't fix it? I'm not a biologist. I'm not a doctor. I'm not in the government. Apparently, I'm not in the army, which is involved in this whole spiel. I can't actually fix it. But what can I do? I can try and do something. I can try and be better. And so we want to appreciate that. I don't need to be worried because this is not a pervasive issue and people don't regularly die on when they get on planes. So too, I can actually make a worry personal and that I'm going to do something to fix this problem. And permanent leads us into our final source, or our final sources. Permanent is worry about the Shekhinah. Because ultimately, as much as we're in Gullus, we don't know what non-Gullus looks like. This is our life. We grew up in the United States. We've visited Israel. We spent time there. We love it and we want to spend more time. We want to live there. But we haven't had a Beis HaMikdash. We don't know what it's like. The hardest day of the year for us may or may not be Tisha B'Av. I assure you, the hardest day of the year for Kaddish Baruch Hu is Tisha B'Av. Because just like as much as we're lacking the Beis HaMikdash, so too is a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And one of the things we need to worry about, we need to spend more time worrying about, is Galus HaShekhinah, that a Kaddish Baruch Hu is in exile. And that's where permanent comes in. That the permanence that exists and trying to fight permanence when someone's going through a tragedy, we want to fight permanence in ourselves. We want to say that this is not a permanent place. This is not a permanent world. Both in that there's an Olam Hazen, Olam Haba, like the Chafetz Chaim, that great story where a businessman says, Rebbe, you got to have some things in your house. You know, how can you live with so little? And the Chafetz Chaim says, well, where is all your furniture? The businessman's like, I'm traveling. I have furniture at home. And the Chafetz Chaim says, I also have furniture at home. But my home is not in this world. My home is in Olam Haba. And that's where all my furniture is. But we need to appreciate that there's a Galus HaShekhinah, and that's what I have to worry about. And because ultimately, that's what's going to lead to our biggest simcha. The biggest simcha is not even when we learn Torah. The biggest simcha is not even when we do mitzvos. And obviously, our biggest simcha is not when we get a raise, and it's not when we succeed in this area or that area, but that's just full of, that's all physical and gashmius. It's, while important and necessary, we know that's not going to be the place where we find simcha, but we're not even going to find our biggest simcha when it comes to Torah. It's not even going to find our greatest simcha in mitzvos. Our greatest simcha is going to be in Yemos HaMashiach. The Geula will be the greatest simcha, and we'll close with a thought about weddings, because in a wedding, we break a glass, and why do we break that glass? Because of Yimashkachek Yerushalayim, because there's no Beis HaMikdash, which is a funny thing to do. That I'm so happy, Baruch Hashem, I'm getting married, and I'm going to dampen my simcha because Nebuch, there's no Beis HaMikdash. I don't think that's pshat. That's not what's going on. That's not why we break a glass at a chuppah, because we want to dampen the simcha for everyone. Adarabba. A wedding is the time of the most joy for the couple, but oftentimes, in Mitzvah Hashem, for the people in attendance. It's such tremendous joy that this couple came together, that Am Yisrael will now have a couple creating children and making the world more holy. And everyone is so besimcha. And then what do? We break a glass and we say, even though we're all so besimcha, this pales in comparison to what it could be. Because where could we be? What kind of simcha could we have? We could have a simcha with a Beis HaMikdash. When we talk about simcha, we can appreciate, as much as simcha stems from knowing that everything a Kadosh Baruch Hu does is for the good, ultimately the simcha that I'm going to feel will be so much better when I have a Beis HaMikdash. Right. We're going to do a quick recap and then call it a night. I'm happy to take any questions after. We started out trying to understand who's going to Olam Haba. Jesters, people who bring simcha, both because it's an expression of their soul, but also because people who are besimcha are better able to connect to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's why you open a shir with a joke. And what jokes really ultimately are is that are putting things in perspective. And if we can have the right perspective that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is running the world, then we'll be besimcha, then we'll be happy. And that's what we see with Nachum Ish Gamzu. Where does simcha come from? Thank you, shir, for pointing it out. Simcha comes from that perspective that even though there are things going on around me, believe me, in my heart, I'm still able to be happy. And nothing can mess me up because I know that everything Kadosh Baruch Hu is doing for the good. Are there bad things happening? Did I lose my job? Are my relationships falling apart? Maybe, chas v'shalom. But I'm still able to be besimcha because I know that everything God's doing is for the positive. And how do I build that simcha? By having bitachon, by having emunah, by having an appreciation that everything that God does for the good, with seichel, intellectually, and hiztapkus, by being just happy with just a little bit. I don't need so much. And that's where I relate Yitzchak. He doesn't think he's smarter than a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's where Torah learning comes in, mitzvahs come in, to be besimcha that we're serving Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then when it comes to worry, we want to worry about mitzvahs. We want to worry about being the best versions of ourselves. And with that, and ultimately, we worry about the Shekhinah, because our greatest simcha will be when the Shekhinah returns. And with that, we wrap up. I'm happy to field any questions. Thank you so much for learning with me, and have a wonderful night. Thank you.